Hello, welcome to another edition of Conversations of the Heart. Of course, it is your boy Tito. We have a very, very special guest in the building. We are celebrating fathers, good men. We're going to be talking manhood with an emphasis on fatherhood with a very special guest, Harvey Laguerre.
Well done. Hello.
Yes.
Thank you for having me, sir. What's going on,
man? Yeah, what's going on? I want to make sure I said, let me make sure I just get that right one time for the one time.
Yes.
So, very, very special guest here. He has, you know, a very good podcast called Men Are the Prize. And he has a relationship podcast with his wife called Love is Black. And, you know, so we're going to get into all of those things, but he is a great father, incredible father of four. So kind of want to get in, first of all, you know what, let's start here. Kind of introduce yourself to the people, you know, just let them know where they can find you. And then we'll get going into the conversation.
All right. Well, Harvey Laguerre is the name, pronounced properly by the host. Thank you again for that. Like you mentioned, I am the part of two podcasts, Love is Black with my wife and Men Are the Prize podcast. That's the one I host myself. You can find that on harveylaguerre.com. That is where you find the podcast. You can listen or you can watch. I have a blog there. My socials are all there. So if you want to get in touch with me, start to connect with me, hit my website, and that'll lead you all to all my socials. If you want to listen to me talk with my wife about our podcast or about our life, loveisblackpodcast.com. That is our website for the podcast. And that's easy.
Yeah. Perfect. So, you know, let's dive right in. Father of four. Mm-hmm. So break that down for me. What do you have? How many girls? How many boys?
So I have a 19-year-old son, a 17-year-old daughter, a 13-year-old daughter, and an 8-year-old daughter.
Okay, yeah, you're down 3-1. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so three daughters and one son. Okay, all different ages. So let's start here. When it comes to fatherhood, I want to go back when, you know, first child, and, you know, being a first time father. Do you remember what that felt like? Because I would imagine it was a bit nerve wracking. I could be wrong. I could just be speaking for me because I don't have any kids yet. So I could just be speaking for me, it being nerve wracking. But was it nerve wracking for you on your first time?
Nerve wracking is probably pretty strong. I mean, for me, since my situation is a little bit different, my wife, we've been married 14 years, but when I met her, she already had kids. Mm-hmm. So to the first two kids, were from a previous relationship.
Yes.
So we got together and then the relationship blossomed and then we moved in together. So there's two kids there, but she was pregnant with our first child. Mm. So I'm essentially a dad to begin with.
Right.
But once we had our first biological child, it was interesting. Her birthday is the day before mine. And I was like, I really wanted her. I was like, she can do it. Just hang on one more day. She was ready to come out. And I just remember, and for me, it's the whole pregnancy, not just, you know, just that day becoming a father. Because when she told me she was pregnant, and I'm like, all right, we're doing this, and I'm at every appointment, I'm holding her hand, I'm doing everything, I'm dad from the beginning until I'm no longer on this earth. So I was there. When I was there, when I saw Sienna be born, it was interesting. It's, you know, it's kind of cliche. Oh, it's the greatest moment of your life. And now you become a man and now you're all grown up and all these things. I've never been fans of those things. I understand where that comes from.
Right.
But it was holding my daughter. My first biological daughter is a special one. It's like, this is mine. This is mine. I'm taking care of you. You know, I was here, I watched you grow. I saw mommy's stomach grow and you got bigger and bigger and this immediate connection. But it was special. And I knew beforehand, all right, I'm going to have somebody to take care of, somebody else to take care of, because there are already two kids there and my wife. So I'm adding to the family. So the family dynamic is already there. There's obviously it's going to be a little bit different because this is my first biological child.
Right.
So it was different. But it was a responsibility that I really feel like I was ready for. it's time. This is what I'm here to do. And
that's amazing.
Good. Yeah.
So speak a little bit about, since you were born to do this, and what does fatherhood mean to you?
Such a good question. I love that. And I do this podcast and I talk to men a lot, and fatherhood comes up almost every time. Fatherhood is an epic responsibility in my mind. And I call my children my agents. When I talk about my kids, and I talk to a lot of men about that, I'm raising people that I'm going to send out into the community, into the town, into the neighborhood, into the state, into the world. I am adding to the population of this world, and I'm adding positively. So to me, fatherhood is molding children into good people who, when they leave the nest, will make this world a better place. And selfishly, it'll be because of what me and my wife did. It is because we're good people. We raise them to be good people. We raise them to know that they're loved, valued, respected, honored, that they are at home, they are loved no matter what. So I take fatherhood as this responsibility. I am adding to the world. It's better because of me, because of what I'm sending out. It's better because of my kids. I'm adding more respectful people to the world. I'm adding more intelligent women to the world. I'm adding more emotional men to the world. I'm adding good people to the world. It's my job to make sure, and doing as much as I can, because we can only do so much. We're not perfect. We're not deities. We're not God. So I can do as much. I can pour as much love and emotion and sacrifice as much as I want into these kids. I do my absolute best, and I'm preparing them to be good when they leave this house. But also letting them know that they can come back here if they need to.
Now, that's a big thing. I know a lot of people say, hey, listen, once you're out this house, you are
Those are my kids. And those are my kids forever.
Yes.
They're not my kids until they turn 18. And truth be told, 18 is nothing. It's just a number. I can smoke. I can go to war. A 17 and an 18-year-old are the same person. An 18-year-old boy is still a kid. An 18-year-old girl is still a kid. That's just a number. I have a 19-year-old son who is still a kid. And we've got all these old-fashioned notions at 18, time for you to go out into the world. No. When they hit that number where the world, especially for black males, when I have an 18-year-old son, he needs me even more than he did when he was 14. Because now I got to teach him different. Now I raised him, and now I have to prepare him for what's out there. And I can talk to him. I can do a lot, but there's very few things that I have to be able to talk to my son and prepare him for the world. So at 19, he's still a kid. 20, he's still a kid. That's just an absolute number.
Yeah.
You leave temporarily, but you could always come back. Because this is where you started. This is where you learn from. This is your school. School never ends, man. I'm always here to teach.
School never ends. Life always teaches, and parents always teach. I think the good thing about parents is you could plant seeds in them, and they may not even listen at 17 or 18. You know, they know everything at 17 or 18.
Oh,
right?
We swear we do.
Everything. Everything, right? But there were things that even, you know, as I got older, I remembered what my mom said. I remember what my dad said. Even at the time at 17, I knew more than them, right? Yeah. When I hit like 23, 24, I remember the words. Things start to come back like that. And I'm like, oh, man, my mom said that. One day I'll tell her that you know, that she was right. You know, one day. It's not going to be today. But one day, I will tell her that
she you was, leave her a message. She won't pick up the phone when you call. Mom, you was right. Oh, I just wanted to let you know. But you're not home. And then you never make that call again.
Nope.
I know.
Yeah, you know, and so, but the seeds that you're planting, especially you being a black male, for a son, is instrumental and it's irreplaceable. And I know the stigmas that we have on Black men and fathers and, you know, what they don't do and not being present. But here's what I know. I know that there are lots of present fathers out there. I came from one. I'm talking to one. I have friends that have great fathers that are all in their lives and things like that. So, you know, the one thing is, you know, celebrating men like you, you know, men like, you know, that I was raised by. You know, I remember growing up, it was a village of fathers, my friends' fathers. You know, listen, if I wasn't doing something, he called my father. He's calling my, hey, look, this is what it is. But also on the flip side, hey, look, I'm going to pick up Terrence. And then you know what? I'll take them there, and then you can pick them up. It was like a system, right, of just Black fathers being active in the community of friends, right? And so I know for sure that there are a lot of amazing Black fathers, and I love what you're doing. And you said one thing about raising emotionally intelligent men, boys into men. We don't hear that a lot, you know. Again, old school rhetoric. Of not being emotionally intelligent, you know, not being vulnerable, not being expressive, not, you know, not communicating your feelings and thoughts and things like that. Why is that so important to you?
It's important for me because I didn't grow up as emotionally available, as emotionally mature. I was mm-hmm. stunted. Me growing up, it was a struggle from essentially 10 from the age of 10 on. I lived with my dad and such, but I really feel like I raised myself. I didn't have an outlet. I didn't have somebody to talk to. I didn't get that talk about sex. I didn't get all these things that you're supposed to. So I grew up, and when I stepped out into the world, I wasn't ready. I went to college, I wasn't ready. When it came to sex, I wasn't ready. When it came to relationships with women, I wasn't ready. I did them, and I learned, you know, playing with fire. That's what happened.
On the job training.
Yeah. And a lot of us have the same problem. A lot of us go into these situations, these relationships, untrained and unable to handle when a bad thing happens, when a relationship goes south, and maybe our heart was broken and we don't know how to handle that. Or if we have to be the one to break the heart and we don't know how to do it respectfully.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We don't know how to handle disappointment. We don't know how to handle loss. We don't know how to handle grief. These are things, since we don't know how to handle them, we just deal with them in other ways. And that's mm-hmm. where toxic comes in. Toxic is this great word you like to throw at men, and we're not toxic. We are ill prepared for what is happening to us. Mm-hmm. We don't raise our boys to struggle with the situation and deal with it and talk to somebody about it. We deal with our men to say, oh, something happened, rub some dirt, keep it moving. So we don't resolve anything. We just skip it.
Mm.
We're not prepared. It is incredibly important that my 19-year-old son learn self-control.
Mm.
Because he's going to come up on some cops, or some cops are going to pull up on him. And it's easy to get angry in a situation where you know you're right. Mm-hmm. Where you know this is not supposed to be happening to you. But men who think like that, who look like us, never get back home to tell somebody they were right.
Mm.
It's important that my son is confident in the man that he is, so that in whatever relationship he's going to go in, he's going to go with somebody who is worthy of him, that recognizes that he is the prize. And it's not just going to be because I find her attractive physically, because
mm-hmm.
that comes and goes. As a man, my son recognizes that as much as we tell women, you have standards, you are valuable, so does he. What are you bringing to me? I deserve somebody who loves me for me, who's not trying to change me, who's going to listen to me, who's going to hear what I have to say and be man enough to understand when this is just not going to work and bounce. My son will know his value, whether it's in any sexual relationship or friend, whatever kind of relationship.
Yeah.
All of that comes from here. He's emotionally mature. And being emotionally mature doesn't mean I don't get sad, I don't get depressed, I don't have all these things. It means I know how to handle it when it comes. And that's the most important thing when it comes to raising. And I say that for my sons because we almost always raise our girls to be emotionally mature, but we don't do that for our boys. So it's so important that my son knows that he cry to mom, to dad about whatever else is happening. You are not less of a man. You are that much more of a man for recognizing an issue that you have and getting help, whether it's from daddy, mom, or somebody else. Right. So I raise emotionally available, mature, confident kids who know what they are and know when they need help.
And that's important because a lot of, the only acceptable emotion for men normally is anger.
Yep.
But when you can actually articulate your emotions in a healthy way and expressing them in a healthy way, and be a healthy communicator, you're actually assisting, right? You're like, when you raise boys like that, you're actually assisting in really healing homes. Because so much of it is, he doesn't communicate. He doesn't know how to express love. He doesn't know this. He doesn't know that, blah, 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 right? But that was because he was never given the permission to. Didn't even know what it was. Everything is suppress it, be quiet, man up, right? Mm-hmm. Even as an adult, the wife is always right. Be quiet, just agree and everything is just to suppress, right? And then we wonder why suicide rates are double, right? Women, right? We wonder why, heart attacks, high blood pressure. These are things that happen a lot because there's so much stored in here and people don't understand that that can turn into physical ailments. And it's unfortunate. So when you raise boys like how you are raising your son, they are going to be some of the catalysts to being a product of a healthy home. And they're going to want to portray that too, and building a healthy home. And then they're going to teach their kids the same thing. Because it's all about our community and healing and getting better. There's so many podcasts and shows and clips about, it's like a gender war. And it's horrible. It's disgusting. It's unnecessary, right? When honestly speaking, it starts from what you're doing. We could talk all about, women this and men this and we hate each other, blah, blah, blah. And we all need each other. Mm-hmm. But it all starts with how you are raising your son. That's where the work starts, right? We can complain by the time the product is finished at 40, 30, 40, 50, whatever. We can complain. But it starts with what you're doing right now with your son. And it's beautiful to see because that's where the change shifts. That's where you start breaking generational curses. That's where you start really seeing, different things going on and successful marriages and things like that, right? So, definitely, I'm so happy to hear, in the way that you're raising your son and with emotional intelligence. And also, it's going to help when it comes to communication, just in life, in the boardrooms.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. How you communicate at work with your coworkers. You're not quick to curse them out. You're not quick to, it's you can articulate when something is wrong. And you can clearly say, hey, look, this is XYZ. This is how I feel. And you can articulate it in a professional way, right? So this is a skill. And I'm glad that you're teaching it to your son. So girl dad, let's shift over for a quick second here. Yeah. Different thing. They always say, it's when you have a girl, it's just that's daddy's little girl, Right. So when it comes to you, so what approach do you take with raising your daughters versus raising your sons? I'm sure it could be a little different, a smidge, if anything.
Yeah. And you know what? It shouldn't be. Raising our kids, it should be the same. We should treat them the same. the same level of intimacy. And that's an important thing with our kids. This, mm-hmm. there should be, and intimacy doesn't just have to be a physical thing. So you hear that word when it comes to talking about your children, and it might be a little uncomfortable for some. There should be a level of safety of intimacy that your kids have with you. Mm. And I do my best to be as emotionally intimate with my daughters as I am with my son, and vice versa. It's easier because we raise our girls to be emotional. Right. That's the hug dad for no reason, whatever. And that just feels comfortable. And I try to do with my son. My son's a big boy, and he'll hug me, and he'll stay, and he'll never leave. And it feels a bit weird, but it shouldn't, but it's just kind of what we've been raised as. That the man, that kind of that dynamic of father to son, it's supposed to be a little bit combative. I think that's the way it's supposed to be. That's how we're raising our son. It's not competitive, but it's challenging because I'm preparing him for the world.
Right.
And I try my best with that. And it's just a process. When it comes to my girls, I raise them to be good people. The same thing I do with my son, but a lot of with my girls, I really feel like it's how the kind of person I am, because I think I'm preparing them to step out into the world. Women have it so much harder than us in a lot of aspects, in the workforce, in their safety, in everything that they're dealing with. I'm trying to raise intelligent, confident women, black women who are going to step out into the world and do what black women do, which is backbone, whatever business, whatever family, whatever place they're in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to prepare them by showing them what a good person is supposed to be and what good person they should look for or look to or not look to. Of course, I want grandkids. I want bunches of them, but they're under no obligation to have a relationship. They don't have to do that. With my girls, it's you are intelligent. I think a big thing is I have three beautiful daughters. I'm biased, of course. I have the most I have the most beautiful daughters on this planet, and they come from the most beautiful woman on the world. But that's secondary to the intelligence that I have with these girls. I have three of the smartest girls walking the street.
Mm.
So the fact that they're beautiful is just extra.
Right.
They're super smart. They're intelligent. They can handle situations, emotionally available. They can see a situation and know how to handle it. And then on top of all that, all three of my girls are bad too. And I can say that as a father, the beautiful girls inside and out. So I raise them to be good, to be empathetic, to be trustworthy, to be a good friend, to be a good best friend, to be somebody who you would trust. Somebody who's comfortable talking to somebody they don't know, to say hello, to see if somebody looks like they're in peril, and give them, you know, and give them that smile to let you know it's okay, to give that hug to let you know it's okay. So I want my kids to be the type of people that when you meet them, you feel like you're in a safe space. They give off that energy. And my girls do that. And I try to do that with all my kids, but my girls get a little bit more from me. Because it's, you know, it's a dad. It's a, you know, it's a dad, girl. It's a girl dad thing. They're my girls. And, you know, I'm going to be paying for three weddings. And I'm going to be walking three girls down the aisle, possibly. And all these things. So there's always a different dynamic.
To save your money.
Exactly.
Three weddings.
I can never save enough money.
College. But come on, college, man. College weddings.
I know. College, down payment on the house, wedding, all this stuff. But this is why we're here. This is why, as parents, we're here. I got that help. I'm giving it. I'm going to continue that. My legacy.
I love that.
Are my kids.
I love that. And I've always wanted to ask somebody this, a parent this. So just how you said, you know, super important that we, you know, with your son, as far as emotional intelligence. And is it just as important to teach your daughters logic?
Yes.
Because it seems like it's flip-flopped, right? Like you have the man who's naturally just logical, right? Doesn't, you know, they have emotions, but it's just, look, I can see things for what it is, not for what I feel it is, right?
Right.
And, you know, but you're teaching also your son to acknowledge his emotions, which is beautiful. But he, mm-hmm. so now it's like a, he's a double, he's like a dual threat. So he can be logical and be emotional and have those intelligence, and it's great. But now when you flip it, normally it's in reverse for women. There's more of an emotional side versus a logical side. Mm-hmm. So I've always wanted to ask a parent, like, especially for a daughter, like, is that imparted in women? Because, and you marry, so I'm not trying to get you in trouble, but because, you know, I've been in relationships and, you know, whatever the case is, and I've had friends. And so sometimes when you think about logic and reasoning and taking sometimes the emotion out of a situation to see it for what it really is, and it's like it can save, in my humble opinion, a lot of heartbreak, right? A lot of situations that shouldn't be. And putting them in bad situations, right? To just say, you know what? This is what it is. He's actually telling me that he doesn't want a relationship. I'm taking it for it. And I'm going. Versus, well, he said he doesn't want a relationship, but I think, I feel I can change that mind. And then it turns into a whole just snowball of just dysfunction, right? And heartbreak. And then it turns into, well, oh man, ain't this, right? Whatever. So what's your take on that? Like the logic, like imparting, like really instilling that logic and reasoning part, like you instill the emotional intelligence in men, in your boys, but instilling that logic and reasoning in women.
When it comes to, I can get the boy out the way first. I'm a logical person at heart. That's kind of me.
Yeah.
Right. That's me in general.
Men.
My wife. Yeah. And my wife is that other side. My wife is probably more logical than I am. She has an emotional side too, but she's an incredibly logical person. So my daughters have the benefit of a mom who is very, when need be, can be very straightforward, beautiful. Can be tunnel vision about things. One thing I try to be careful with is I don't want to stifle emotion. I don't want to stifle dream. I don't want to stifle daydreaming. I don't want to stifle imagination. So what I can do is teach logic. And I create conversation with my girls for no reason. I want them to be able to express themselves. Right. I can start a conversation and disagree with them and have them defend what they think. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to be right. I'm just trying to get them talking about things. So right. I treat them to be logical. But at the same time, I still want them to have that emotional component. I still want them to want to do things. The key is to recognize when certain situations where you have to take the emotion out. And if I can teach them to be stoic when necessary, but be emotional, but more importantly, be yourself, be who you are. And if you're an emotional person, then you lead with your heart. And I can, and I have a child who's like that. And I'm like, you can be that way. When you stick your heart out like that, it can get stomped on sooner. Prepare yourself for that. And it'll hurt sometimes when you get to the person or the situation that's worth it. All the times your heart was stomped on, it'll feel worth it. So when I have a stoic girl who's like, okay, straightforward, I'm just like this. I'm like, okay, that's fine. The only thing is that kind of tunnel vision may cause you to not take risks. When there's something you want to do, there's a possibility of a dream that you want to fulfill. And because you're so straightforward, you may not take that hard right turn and try to do something. Sometimes you have to be emotional. Sometimes you have to risk hurt.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And all my kids, I try to do that with. My girls, especially because we come out of this world and we're out there and women in the workforce and they're big and they're doing all these things and I don't need no man and all this kind of stuff coming out there. And I want them to know that you can be a strong, independent woman, but we all need somebody. Yes. And that's when emotion comes out. And that's when you have to risk it. And we have to risk our hearts and our minds and hope for the best. And sometimes we lose. But that loss is always a lesson so that when you win, you appreciate it even more.
Yep. And sometimes we are afraid of losing. Yeah. Which I don't even say it's really losing. I just say it's just a lesson. You know, I mean, that's just kind of
winning too. We're afraid to win too.
That's a big fact too. That's what a big fact.
What do I do now? Yeah. I got what I want. Now what?
Yeah. That's a big one right there too. We are afraid of winning too. Mm-hmm. So which is interesting because it's like, all right, so you're afraid of losing and you're afraid of winning. So it's like you're just stuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. so you don't try. You just stay.
Mm-hmm.
You don't progress. You don't regress. You just stay in this one spot.
Mm.
There's no improvement there. Sometimes you got to take an L to get that big W, man.
That is true. No risk.
Struggle. Yeah. No reward.
No reward.
Yeah.
So manhood, you know, when it comes to manhood, you know, I think it's changed throughout the years. I won't say it's confusing. I think people are labeling just anything that they want. There's betas, there's alphas, I don't know. I think there's like two or three different other labels that they're putting on men, right? From your perspective, what is your definition of manhood and masculinity? I mean,
it's a great question. I asked that on my pod. I'll answer it, but I got a question for you first.
Sure.
When you think of masculinity, and I don't know, I don't want to veer too far off of this. Mm-hmm. But when you think of masculinity, in your opinion, is sexuality a part of that conversation?
Good question. I would say historically, yeah. I mean, it seems to have always been. Yeah, I mean, it seems to have always been a part of, right, manhood, masculinity. You know, it's always have been. It's always been the conversation, right? I think, you know, I think that's honestly, unfortunately, why I think sometimes men make different decisions with women, you know, and become impregnate them when they shouldn't, you know, just broken home. It's just a lot of just different things. I think that's that's always been a part of it. Especially when it comes to, you know, sexuality and sex and, you know, just things that you should do. You should, you know, what makes you a man, right? Mm-hmm. To me, it's always been money and sex. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that to be true, but you know, in a societal way, I feel like that is exactly what it's been. How much money you could provide,
right?
How many women you can sleep with.
That's it.
And that will be your worth as a man, unfortunately.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I've never been a fan of a lot of my manhood depends on who I love. Masculinity shouldn't have anything to do with, I don't think it should have much to do with how I deal with the opposite sex and sexual relationship, or even with the same sex. To me, masculinity should be a fluid conversation. Manhood or masculinity, I honestly think, is a different definition for every single man walking around. Every single man should have a different idea what masculinity means, because it's something, in my opinion, that's personal to you.
Mm.
Masculinity to me is me taking care of my kids in this house and making sure they're safe. 40 or 50 years ago, that wouldn't be masculine. It would be feminine because my wife is working and making the money and mm-hmm. I'm at home. I am as much of a man as anybody else because I'm mm-hmm. taking care of my kids. So my masculinity is not defined by the check I bring home or how big mm-hmm. the car is or what I paid for. My masculinity is I'm a damn good person. I raise wonderful children. Mm. I take good care of this wife of mine. I take care of the family. I don't do it monetarily. I do it emotionally, psychologically. I do it in a multitude of ways that when you add that up, it's worth a lot more than whatever check I could bring to the house. So to me, masculinity is how I carry myself. And I carry myself as a parent, as a husband, as a provider of many things that isn't just dollar bills or change. Mm. How I carry myself and the kind of man I am is, for me, I take it as taking care of the people around me and loving them and making sure they're safe. But for me, it's also understanding that I'm a work in progress and that I have to make sure it's, for me, it's just, it's a reflex to make sure my kids and my wife are okay. And occasionally I have to remind myself that I have to take care of me too. So being masculine means providing for everyone, including yourself.
I like that, especially when you added yourself, because a lot of us don't do that. So when it comes to, going into, gender roles and things like that, right? I know you mentioned, that you're a stay-at-home dad. And that's something that hasn't, it wasn't always like that, though, for clarity, like you worked before, it just so happened that life took a turn and your family made the best decision, right, for the family, because you want to raise your kids. You didn't want, babysitters or daycare to raise your kids, right? That was a big part of the decision, right?
Right. Correct.
Because you were bringing home money, and as well, you were working and is your wife, right? And I guess, it just hit a point to where that, hey, I want to raise my kids.
Right. Sometimes life does that. Sometimes, we were two parents working, but nobody's really taking care of the kids. And when the situation comes about where I no longer have a place to work, now I can be home. Now I can be present and I can be there for them in the morning to get my kids to school, to the bus stop, to the doctor when they're not feeling well, to make sure they've got lunch, to make sure they're going to whatever sporting event, to hang out with their friends, to do whatever. When that comes about, and I jumped on that and I wasn't sure I would love it as much as I did.
Right.
But it's what I meant to do is to be the parent and be there. And we talk about gender roles. It's still something that concerns the people. I'm Haitian. Like, I feel like I mentioned that to you. We're Caribbean. I'm not supposed to be doing this. I'm supposed to be out working, come home to dinner and blah, 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 whatever. That's not what it's supposed to be at all. But to me, what I'm supposed to be is a parent to my children, whether I am providing them financially or providing in the ways that I do. So I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. And I'm no less of a man for doing it. I am more of a man because I'm here doing it while supporting them, while supporting my wife, who's out there doing the man type stuff. I'm a man who recognizes that I don't have to do that stuff. I can do this stuff at home. And I can build this house and take care of this house and maintain this home and take care of these kids and be there to give them a hug, to put a Band-Aid on a scraped knee, to give them a hug when somebody hurts their feelings, to help them with the homework, to give them some hell when they're disagreeing, when they're not doing what they're supposed to. Right. I'm here for all of these things. And that is as masculine as it can be. And we're past the point of just a man is work, come home, whatever, and wife is stay home and watch the kids type of thing. We are doing what's best for ourselves and for our family. And I'm completely content with that.
Right. And I always say people have to do what's best for them and their family. Because when you try to keep up with society or try to keep up with certain things, it's you're not doing what's best for you.
Right.
So I can applaud, especially, you guys making a decision together and saying, hey, this is what's best. I'd rather have a parent in the house to raise the kids. Right. I think that's something that is to be applauded, because now your kids are still getting a parent at home. Mm-hmm. Right. And they're not being raised by a nanny or whatever the case is. And if a nanny works for somebody else, beautiful. Right. But as for you and your house, you wanted to be there and having a parent there works for you. And so I think that that's awesome. And that doesn't affect, and you don't let that affect your manhood. And I can't tell you how many guys it would affect their manhood because of, more so because of probably what people would say about them. Right. How people would look at them, how people, like all of those things, you know how it goes. As you said, you're Caribbean, especially in Black culture, period. Just what that can do. Right. So, and a lot of times it's ego, right? Like, we have to be in this dominant position, right? Quote unquote dominant position, leaders of the home. And leadership for most men, like I just said before, money.
Right.
That's what makes me the leader. Being a provider means financial, right? That's what that means. You know, but you actually are doing more, right? Because here's the thing. A woman will say, taking care of a house and kids, it's a full-time job. Mm-hmm. And it's, and if you actually broke it down and you paid a woman for all of that, it would be hundreds of thousands of dollars, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's the same energy. It's the same thing when you do it.
That's right.
Oh,
that's right.
Oh, over.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you know I'm saying, listen, yes, I've been around kids. I've been around and they're beautiful. So what I'm about to say, please, they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. But one sometimes is enough. Two, it's more than enough.
Mm.
When you got four, when you got four,
gang, brother, four is a
that's
problem.
A different thing.
Yeah, listen, recognition of the challenge of raising children is important. I love my kids. I love what I do, but I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I understand what I'm in for. I understand that my kids will bother me, will annoy me, will test me in every way. Part of being a good parent is recognizing our limits. And sometimes these kids, and when you have several of them in the same mood and just being kids, and that's the thing, you have to recognize we're dealing with children. It's hard to not take some of the stuff they do personally. You really, and I never mentioned this to you, but I'll tell you, when it comes, I learned a lesson really early with Sienna, my first biological child.
Mm-hmm.
I watched her come into the world. I was the first person to hold her, cut the umbilical cord, love this baby. Oh my goodness. This child hated me for the first 6 months of her life. I couldn't feed her. I couldn't change her. I couldn't do anything. She was attached to her mother.
Mm.
When it's, and it, for me, there's two kids that I've been, you know, working on raising already. The first child that I saw from inception to mm-hmm. birth, from everything. And this child could not stand me at all. That I took personally, mm-hmm. but it wasn't personal. That baby right. didn't have the mindset like, I hate this dude, Harvey, why you keep hanging out? And that's not what it was. That child was attached to mom. She got breastfed. That's the person she knew. She knew the smell. She knew the skin. That's it. But how hard that was.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Like, that child just didn't want to deal with me. And it hurt my feelings. And just because I know it's a baby and I can't be mad at the baby, but I'm still mad at the baby and I was mad at the situation. I'm like, this is like mm-hmm. my first chance to do this. And she had nothing to do with me. So we have to recognize that kids, by their very nature, are going to do things personally to you that are not personal.
Yeah. You know, and I think, you know, and sometimes, you know, I've been known to, I think with women sometimes, they're like, Terrence, you don't like kids. I'm like, no, I love kids. I'm just honest about it. I'm past the cute. Like, I look past the cute. Like, I think that's the thing. I look past the cute and look at the reality.
Mm.
It's beautiful. They're cute. They're cuddly. They make beautiful noises. They talk. Oh, my God. The first words and walking. It's like, oh, my God. Everything is picture. Okay, it's cute. Of course. That's the beautiful part. They love on you. They hug you. It's like, oh, it's all worth it. Oh, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
See, but this isn't Disney.
Right.
I'm honest. There's another side to it. So understand what your, like, I, it's always to me, understand what your capacity is. Honest, like, sometimes people go into things wanting something, not knowing if they have the capacity to handle. Right? I want $1 million. Can you handle $1 million?
Mm-hmm.
Or you're gonna end up blowing it somewhere, you're gonna kill yourself with this $1 million, right? Like, right. So I'm very honest about children. They're beautiful, but life changes when you have kids.
Mm-hmm.
This is a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Like it, this is, and so when you tell me you have four kids and you're raising them in the way that you are, it's beautiful to me because you also just said you have the reality. And that to me is super important because it goes past cute. The cuteness, the cuteness phase.
That goes fast. Let me tell you. No, I mean, them baby, they're cute for a year or two, but after you've seen enough diapers and cleaned up enough messes and just gone through much, I mean, my children are still, they're cute in that, of course, in that sense.
Yeah.
But they're not as cute as they were when they were younger, because now the stuff that they do with the knowledge of the circumstances.
Yes.
You know, a baby not wanting me to feed her is just a baby not wanting to be fed by me.
Right.
A 13-year-old who doesn't eat the food that I made because from whatever reason, that's some different type of stuff. Yeah. That's different.
Exactly.
Yes. So
exactly.
It comes with the territory, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I remember being a certain age and I'm like, Mom, can you take me to the mall? Sure, honey. No problem. All right, Mom. All right. So look, can you do me a favor? Can you drop me at the corner? Like, can you drop me at the corner? This whole thing right here. I want to pretend that I got hit by myself, but I wanted to ride. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ride, but I want to pretend that I came here by myself. So can you just jump to
get
the corner?
Get into the vicinity of the mall, please.
Please. My mom looking at me like,
I'm going to pull Judas to the door. Either you can stay home, make a decision, brother.
Mom's looking at me like, you Judas. Mm-hmm. Like, and I'm just like, you get young, you know, you're feeling yourself a little bit, you know, again, it's not even personal because, like you said, even at that age, it wasn't personal. I love my mom to death. Mm-hmm. Like at that age, I loved her to death. But you know, the ego starting to come in a little bit. You start smelling yourself a little bit. You got the little young, you know, girls running around at that time. You young teenager. You know, it's like that's not cool. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it was never personal. So I remember myself. So I know, like sometimes, like what you're getting into. You just know what you're getting into before you get into it.
Yes, sir.
Because people fall in love with Disney and cute. Mm-hmm. It's just like marriage and everything else. You fall in love with Disney and cute, but not understanding the work that goes behind it. That's the thing, right? So I love the fact that you have a stern understanding of what you have gotten yourself into.
I got I have to, otherwise mentally I'm just gonna crash one day.
Especially being a stay-at-home dad.
Yeah, like, that's they always here, man. That's it. It's just they go to school, but they always come back. So I have to maintain my sanity. I have to.
And that's amazing. So I know your husband. So take me down that road a little bit. What does, you know, being a husband mean to you? Like, you know, marriage means something for, you know, different things to different people and get married for different reasons, you know. But, you know, what does being a husband mean to you? Like, what does that mean to you?
Being a husband to me means one, being part of a team. And I think that's the first thing. Marriage is work. The way you were talking about how we see our kids and it's very, oh, it's Disney, it's cute and all that. Marriage is essentially the same thing. We see marriage as like, oh, it's the wedding. Oh, everything's going to be great, blah, 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 whatever. There's a lot of people who get married for the wedding and not for the marriage.
Ooh, yes.
And once you get past the day of the white dress and the tux and the party, and then the next day, and then after the honeymoon, and then that's marriage. Mm-hmm. Marriage is, that's what you have to focus on. To me, marriage is, I'm with the team, I'm with the teammate. And I've never been a fan of the whole 50-50 thing because it's not real.
Right.
Sometimes I'm feeling good and I'm like, I got you, let's do whatever. And sometimes I don't. And then she's got to pull and take us wherever. Marriage is knowing her as well, if not better, than she knows herself. Marriage is knowing myself as well as I can, but knowing she knows me too. Is understanding, sometimes talk, sometimes shut up, sometimes listen. Marriage is knowing that person and knowing what they need or doing the best you can to meet their needs.
Right.
Marriage is respect. Marriage is support. My wife is the one who works. She works, but we have our own business. I'm literally her assistant. I set the schedule. I talk to patients, do all that stuff. And I'm not just some assistant who does it. I'm her husband who does it. So I'm setting the schedule, but I'm like, okay, she's seeing this many people. I'm putting a gap in there because I know she's going to need some time. It's being being right next to her, being by her side, being that support system, that safe space, her biggest cheerleader, her most honest critic, but loving her no matter what. Being a husband is watching her be the great mom, being the best dad so she can pull back sometimes. Marriage and being a husband is just being as much as I can be for her so she can be everything to herself.
Mm, that's beautiful. That's really beautiful. When it comes to marriage, what would you say would be the biggest hang up, right? Like, and you don't have to be personal about your marriage, but just like if, when it comes to marriage, like what would you say is like the biggest downfall? Like, would you say that some couples have in marriage?
It's when you talk about marriage, and obviously I do this podcast and I talk to my wife about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And the easy word is communication.
Mm.
And in relationships, because really a couple that really communicates well is able to tell that person hard truth sometimes.
Mm.
Stuff that they don't want to hear, but maybe they need to.
Mm.
If I can tell you something and I know to a degree it's going to hurt you, but it's coming from a place of love, not a vindictive place, that's communication is huge. But for me, if I had to pick, I think, and to a degree, they're kind of one and the same. But for me, vulnerability is really the big one. When you're married to somebody, you're in a way, you're giving everything and you're taking everything. You need to be in a space. It's going to be a good marriage when you can just be yourself and whatever you are, whatever you're feeling, whatever is going on, I should be comfortable to tell that person anything.
Mm.
And I should be comfortable. And I can speak as a man. It's harder for us to be vulnerable in general, but then especially with our wives.
Yep.
We need to be open about everything. That's hard to just lay it out there. That's scary. I don't want to be judged. I don't want to feel like what I'm saying is going to come across wrong, or is going to be used against me, or I'm going to be judged. But when I put myself in a marriage, in a relationship, I have to, you got me.
Mm.
This is me, the good, the bad, the indifferent. And I got you, the good, the bad, the indifferent, the moody on this day, the super happy on this day, the, you know, the one who initiates sex that day, the one who doesn't want it the other day. All of that comes with it. We're together. We are intertwined.
Mm.
And we are an example for our kids. Mm. It is imperative that this marriage is good, but also looks good.
Mm.
Because I'm going to have a hand in potentially four more marriages.
Four.
My kids.
Mm-hmm.
They need to, this marriage needs to work so that I can be good, so my wife can be good, but for the men and women that my kids marry, because they're going to be with new people. And this is the way marriage is supposed to look.
Mm.
I'm supposed to be vulnerable, comfortable. We can laugh. We can mess with each other. We can joke. That person needs to be your best friend. My wife is my best friend. I am my wife's best friend. That's what this needs to be. So marriage is all of it. It's everything, good and bad.
Mm. Beautifully said. You know, and I'm glad that you said that, especially from a Black perspective and having a healthy marriage. You know, I and not perfect, you know, because people paint pictures and not a perfect marriage, but you guys have a healthy marriage. And I think for me, going for a healthy marriage is more important than a perfect marriage, because it's never going to happen.
There is no perfect marriage. There is no perfect marriage.
No, of course. I know that. But I see people, you know, when they look at certain celebrities and they go, oh my God, what was the prayer that Ciara prayed? Oh my goodness. Like, you know, whenever you see it, it's like, okay, all right.
People only see it's the superficial. Listen, that's a great prayer that she prayed.
Yes.
But you know damn well, week three of the NFL season, and he not home, and she by herself, she's happy for him, but annoyed that he's not there. Like, it's a marriage. There's always the ugly side of a marriage that we don't see. And to be honest, that's not our business. We're not supposed to see that.
Right.
So it's good that I'm going to see that Russell and Sierra are happy and all that. But you notice some days where he's like, listen, I'm not even trying to hear you. I'm not trying to see you dance right now. Leave me alone. You know, and she's like, I don't give a damn that you did that bootleg and scored that touchdown. I'm not trying to hear you now. You know, we're humans too. We got stuff me out going here in on.
Denver.
You know, seriously, you, got me out here in you Denver. Know what? It's cold out here. I mean, they was in Seattle before and I warm out there.
Exactly.
But you know, it's marriage and it's support, and she's a great wife, and I'm sure he's a great husband.
Yeah, too. Yeah.
But the inner workings of a marriage are not for anybody else but the people in it.
Exactly.
And that's the way it should be.
And I just believe sometimes in social media, sometimes you just get too invested in other people's stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And I get it, you know. But again, having a good eye of there's going to be good, there's going to be bad. Now, it doesn't have to be toxic. It doesn't have to be. The one thing that we do in our culture is we celebrate struggle love 24/7, 365. Mm. We celebrate struggle love a lot. Like,
yeah.
I stayed humble. Like, I stayed, right? Like, you know, and we've idolized this thing of struggle love, of staying in places that sometimes can be dangerous,
right?
To you physically, your health, whatever the case is. Infidelity, cheating, all types of things that we identify as, it's not easy. Nope. But it's like, wait a minute, hold on. You guys took this way left now. Like, we didn't say you have to stay, you know, if you're in an abusive situation or if you are in infidelity. And, you know, that's not what we meant when we said for better, for worse. That's not what we say. No. We're talking about just things that could be taken care of, worked through.
Yep.
Things aren't always going to be easy, right? But it's this ideology of just stuff, you know, the struggle and love. And it's like, and the one thing is, and I, again, I don't mean to harp on the old school, but sometimes you would see people married for 50, 60 years. Mm-hmm. Not that was love. A lot of it was convenience. A lot of it was, I can't work, so I got to stay here. I have to take this because this is what it is. Half time, people didn't even sleep in the same bed. But we didn't know the inner workings of it till later on down the road. And it's just like, well, man, I didn't know you put up with that. I didn't know you put up with all of this. But that was because times were different, right?
Yep.
You know, so it's yes, idolizing, yes, oh my God, I want 50, 60 years, like great, 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 great. But man, that great, 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 great didn't tell you all the stuff he or she was putting up with.
Yes, sir.
You know,
yes,
he's pretty good for businesses, for business reasons, and money reasons, whatever it is, right? So it's just, we got to understand really what marriage is really about, and having a healthy marriage, you know, and aspiring to do so, right? And also working on yourself as an individual, right? To me, that's key, because when you work on yourself as an individual, then you could show up as your, at least try to be your best self in your marriage. Right. But if you're not well with yourself, how can you be well for somebody else?
Yep.
Right? And if you do, and we could pretend now. We're always good at that. Okay, I'm good. Don't worry about it. But internally, you toe up. And then that shows in your attitude with your wife, with your children, with your husband, whatever the case is. You know, so I like the fact that you're leading with healthy. I think that's what we all should aspire to have, is a healthy relationship, especially in the Black community.
Especially.
I wanted to get into the podcast for a bit. Because the title, Men Are the Prize, right? Now, if people just look at that, well, I'll say if women just look at that as face value, then what you mean by that? Like, no, we're the prize. And you know, that's the argument. I know you did that by design. I know you're a smart fellow. I know you did that by design. So, you know, it's going to spark a lot of different things, right? Oh, why do, and And here's what I've heard, because men have said this for a while. Oh, men are the prize too. Oh, you men want to be women so bad. Women are the prize. And I'm like, oh, there we go. Right? Mm-hmm. So break it down for me. The whole men are the prize. Like, what does that mean? Because I know it means something.
Right.
What does that mean?
So a lot of what you said is true. So the reason men are the prize is the title is because I always heard and will never stop hearing that women are the prize. So, mm-hmm. And it's because we've been bred to chase. That's what we men are supposed to do. We're out there to mm-hmm. go get. We're hunters to a degree. And I always heard women are the prize. And I'm like, yes, you are. But so are we. In my head, I'm like, women are the prize. I love women.
Yes.
I love men too. We're good people too. We are the prize also. I wanted, and I mean, I've been able to kind of verbalize what I think prize really meant, but I've really gotten to the point where I want men to put ourselves on the top of our own list.
Mm.
So when I say I'm the prize, I mean that I am valuable enough that I need to be taken care of. I need to take care of me.
Mm.
I need to take care of me emotionally, physically, mentally. I need to take care of me because I'm the prize. So what this show is, what this podcast is a space for men to do something we typically don't do, and that is talk about ourselves. We are the subject of our own. This every podcast I bring you on, and you are the subject. And I will talk about the extracurricular, your wife, your kids, your job, but I'm always coming back to you when we're talking about it because you're the product. What prize represents is four of those letters represent characteristics that I think make a good man. So when I get a man on the show, we talk. One thing that I do, I start doing is that I get a man on and we do podcasts, you podcast like I am.
Mm-hmm.
And 9 times out of 10, there's a bio. I read that man's bio.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in a good bio. You tell me everything that you did. I went to school. I got these letters after my name. I got this award. I got this job, blah, 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 whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And my first question is, what's it like hearing all the stuff that you've done? When's the last time somebody handed you your flowers, brother? I just read off your resume. What is that like to hear just how amazing you are?
Mm-hmm.
When's the last time somebody praised you just because?
Mm-hmm.
We don't get that.
No.
Women are praised constantly because of their looks, because they're independent, because of all this. Men, we're supposed to provide. We don't get praised for doing that. It's an expectation for us. So that's the first thing I do. Brother, I read this. You're the president of this company. You've got this show. You've done this movie, blah, 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 whatever. Do you understand what you've done?
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear it? So that's the first thing. So after I get past giving that man his flowers, then I go through those letters. P is purpose. What is your purpose, brother? Mm. What are you here for? Why? How did you figure that out? Are you where you want to be with this purpose? So we talk about that. When I get into that question of purpose, typically it leads to childhood, because a lot of us discover our purpose by how we were raised. A lot of men have discovered their purpose inadvertently by their experience growing up. I've talked to men who were in abusive households, who were foster kids. They're social workers. They're attorneys. They are therapists. They are the thing they needed growing up. They become that person that they needed in their corner when they were growing up. And a lot of our purpose comes from becoming the thing we needed. So that's how we usually get into an open conversation about what was it like growing up, young man? What was it like growing? We get past that. R is resilience. Resiliency. What has happened to you to make you the man that you are? How did that loss, that death, that job you didn't get, that broken heart, how did these things mold you and make you the man that you are today? A lot of people would take an L and may never come back from it. You didn't do that. You took this L and you're stronger for it. How did that work for you? How long did it take? I do that because other men need to hear that. A man need to hear that a man went through a struggle and came out better the other side. Men need to hear a man just talking about anything so that you understand it's okay. I skip the I. Z is Zia. Z, it's my favorite word. It's what do you love? It can be work. I don't want it to be, but but that's really up to you. What do you do for you? What is your thing? Not what you do with the kids, with your wife. What is something you do for you? Life is kicking you in the butt. Work is hard. I didn't get the promotion. You know, my marriage is a little shaky. The kids don't respect me. Whatever. What do you do for you when life is pushing you down? What do you do for you? Is it yoga? Do you ball? Do you golf? Do you meditate? What do you do for you? Zeal. What is your thing? And then finally, E is expectation. Mm. 5 years from now, where are you going to be? You going to be the same man you were today? Are you going to get the job? You going to write that book you've been talking about? You going to start that business you've been talking about? Are you going to take your wife or your girl on that trip you said you've been wanting to do? Are you going to start going to football practice with your son like you said you've been doing? Are you going to be that man? What do you expect from yourself? Because we should never be content with where we are.
Mm.
Especially as men, we should always be looking for more, to be better, to do more. Because when I'm better, my wife is better.
Mm.
My kids are better. Mm-hmm. My street, my neighborhood, my city, my state, my country, my world, we are better. When men are good, you can't stop a motivated and a good mentally set man. That's the point of this. When I get through this, what are you? How'd you get there? How did you deal with the crap that happened? What do you love? And what are you going to be in 5 years?
Mm.
If we can get through all of that, talk about that. I get that man to be like, there's usually a moment when I talk to men on this podcast and something that they say clicks. When you get a motivated man, back up, because it's done. He's going to go do what he needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
A motivated man is not to be messed with. And sometimes that's what we just need to do. So that's what I do. Doing this, hopefully, because I do this, and I coach men too. And I use this when I coach also.
Mm.
What you missing? Why are you not where you're supposed to be? Who's stopping you? You know who's stopping you, right? It's that dude in the mirror. It's that dude. It's not the white man out there. It's not your wife. It's not your kids. It's not situation. It's you.
Mm.
Why are you letting that happen? Why are you your own worst enemy?
Mm.
So the podcast is a space for men to be open, to be emotional, and to acknowledge that we can be our greatest enemy, but we can be our motivating force.
Mm.
I just got to get at you. And that's what it is. So prize on its face represents, you know, women are supposed to be the prize, but it's more to build confidence in that.
Deeper man. Than that.
You are so much more, and you don't even know it yet. And the day you know, you don't even need me anymore.
It's going to be dangerous.
The day the man knows he is dangerous, he is bound for greatness, and he's the best husband, the best father, the best friend, the best everything.
Mm.
And that's the kind of man we need.
Powerful, powerful. And I absolutely love it. So when it comes to this podcast, when does it air?
Well, it runs I drop it every Saturday. That's it, you know, if we're on a weekend. We are in season 2, but we're coming to the end. I end my seasons on Father's Day. That's why I like to do it. So I love that we're able to talk about this and do this. This is the ending of season 2. I'm going to have 2 episodes that Saturday, and then obviously Father's Day is a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So we're coming up to the end. As of this recording, there's 3 more episodes left. And every Saturday, a different guest, a different man. 99% of the time, it's a man. I've had a few women in there just to give a different perspective on things.
Mm-hmm.
But if, you know, once this season is over, I will have dropped about 75 episodes. I've talked to so many people and it's just a lot of talk, and I love these conversations. But we're coming up. So this coming Father's Day, I think that's the 18th. Is the 18th, I think, is the last episode of season 2. I'm going to take a nice break after that. But it's every Saturday. But if you want to if you're just getting a hold of me right now for the first time, harveythecare.com, and watch or listen to all the other stuff. The first episode of this podcast is I put myself through that prize pitch. I am Harvey is the first person.
Mm.
So I'm like, if I'm going to ask men to do this, I got to do it too.
Absolutely.
And that's what it is. So this podcast is labor of love, and I'm here to get men to the place that they want to be at, to be the kind of men that they want to be, the kind of men that they are proud to show to the world.
And that's needed. Yes, and that's needed. Love is black.
Love is black. Yes. and that's the beginning of this podcast journey for me. We did that first. COVID, I'm at home. We can't go anywhere. Me and my wife, like, you know, we've had great conversations. Let's do a podcast. And all of a sudden, we couldn't go anywhere. We're like, well, we really might as well do this podcast.
Yep.
And we started talking. Love is Black is a relationship podcast within the culture. It's black love. If I turn on the TV and it's a black relationship, God forbid it's some Tyler Perry thing and I'm a dark-skinned black man and I cheated on my beautiful light-skinned black woman, or it's I'm abusive, or I don't like women, or I speak badly of them, and I'm a deadbeat dad or a drug dealer, or all these things, black love is rarely shown in a positive light. And that's what we wanted to do. So that first season is just me and her talking about our relationship, how we met, arguments that we've had, difference of opinion that we have about stuff. We get into it. Like, you in the marriage with us. Season two, we want to talk, we want black love. So we got black couples on. How did you meet? How did you stick it out? Why did you know? How did you know that was the person? All this stuff. And in the end, it's a representation of good black love. Black love, that's what this is. Black love is not negative. Black love is not the craziness that you see in commercials or in songs or in movies or in TV shows. Black love is love like anybody else. Season three, we kept going with that, but we sprinkled in different subjects, stuff like that. Season four ended a little while ago because we've been taking a hiatus. And that was the same, just different couples and just talking about stuff. We communicate. We talk. We have a vibe. We have a good connection. And it's like 30, 35 minutes, 40 minutes of just us talking about whatever hits us.
Now, are they all married couples or just relationships?
We caught people. We had the benefit of married couples who were together for a long time. We got people who were just getting together, working their way up to marriage. We've had every kind of, you know, of just people who are partners and married people. And we wanted to give you every part of a relationship, the good. We want to hear the good. We want to hear the bad. How did you propose? What was it like? It's so interesting. We talked about marriage earlier. That wedding is a beautiful thing. That first year after marriage, that's hard. That's a whole change. I was living by myself. I was all good. Now I'm with this girl. I can't just get up and go. And, you know, man, she just can't get up and go. And, you know, these girls, now I don't know if I'm feeling this. And I don't know, do we watch these same shows? And I don't really like the way you make this food and blah, 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 whatever. All these things. And it's important that we show every part of it. But with respect.
Of course.
And with love. And that's why it works.
I love that. And are you starting a new season?
We are starting a new season. What we're going to do is something entirely different. We've talked about our love. We've spoken to other people about their love. We've kind of examined what the word love means. For season five, we're writing our own love story. Season five, we're not going to have any guests. Season five, we are going to write a love story. Each of us will represent a character. We're going to write the book. So every week is this couple, and we're going to show their love story. And that's what we decided. So we've been writing it. Once we've got a few chapters in, then we're going to start dropping episodes. And then probably at the end of the season, we will just release it and publish it as a book. We've talked about black love, and now let's write a fictional one with all the crap that happens, all the good, the bad, but the love is always apparent in it. And that's what we're going to do for season five.
Beautiful.
And that's coming soon. Yeah.
Congratulations ahead of time.
Thank you.
Definitely would love to, you know, put it out there. Definitely would love to interview you and your lovely wife when you guys are, when you guys get ready to do it and launch, you know, and just have that discussion with you guys, you know, and maybe get a little bit into your story, you know, together.
Okay. No problem.
As a unit.
We don't have a problem talking. That's what we do. When we get close to release and when we start putting these episodes out, we'll be happy to have to get on there with you. And certainly we'll love to talk about it. Our story is an interesting one, and it's filled with our ups and downs and life and love and all that. I love talking about it. So, yeah, we'll be good.
Perfect. Well, listen, definitely want to thank you, Harvey, for one, raising some incredible kids, and taking the stance on, you know, family that you have. You know, I'm so glad that we got a chance to really go into detail about your family, the stories, your perspective on family, Black men, raising Black boys, and raising beautiful girls. You know, so thank you for your perspective and really being a leader in this space when it comes to parenthood, fatherhood, manhood. You know, I just wanted to take the opportunity to honor that because, you know, Father's Day is coming up. You know, I know what a good father is. You know, I was raised by one, and I know the impact of presence there. You know, presence is important for Black fathers, and you are one of many, but who are present, you know, and we honor fathers like you, you know, and we need a lot more like you. You know, but you're raising them, but you're raising a special young man to become that. And whatever his journey is, I'm sure everybody that he touches is going to be impacted and blessed by that because of the way you have raised him. And that's important. And of course, Black men will benefit from you raising beautiful girls, yes. Right? Whoever ends up with them at some point in life will be better men because of the way that you raised your beautiful girls, right? So definitely just want to honor that and happy Father's Day ahead of time. I hope that you do something fun in whatever capacity that is. I hope that you're honored in the way that you need to be honored because you deserve that.
Thank you so
much. You know, definitely I encourage everyone to go check out his podcast on YouTube and check him out on Instagram and really just see and listen to his podcast and the guests that he has on. Very, very passionate about manhood and what that looks like and the state of men. And that's important. And we need more of that, you know, because you can promote and promote men and be about men without degrading women. And that's what he does.
So true.
That's what Harvey does. You know, because we have a lot of people who, and I've seen them out there. They go viral. They have millions of followers, and they uplift women at the expense of men, and they make money, make a lot of money off of it. And hey, fair play to them. You know, they take advantage of whatever it is. You know, but I personally love people who uplift the culture. And you can uplift men without bashing women, and you can uplift women without bashing men. And that's what his platform is all about. And that's why I really wanted to have him on my show, because I love men like this, who's fair to all and who's about the culture. So, you know, so with that said, you know, tell everyone where they can find you, listen to your podcast, your social medias, any upcoming projects that you have. Now is the time.
I appreciate it. Again, by the way, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you for the wonderful words. I appreciate it. It's nothing better than positive words, nothing better than affirmations from a fellow brother. So thank you. I appreciate the time. You can find me. My website's the best thing to do, harveylaguerre.com. You will find my socials. You can click on them. You'll get me there. My podcast is there. Pretty sure there's a link to Love is Black there. Everything that I do on this outside to uplift men, you can find on my website. A lot of the podcast and everything that I really want to express to the world, to show to people, you can find on the website. I like podcasting on the social medias. I'm an 80s kid. I love the 80s. So I'm an 80s R&B head. I'm an 80s TV. So you see me talking about random stuff on that, because a lot of things when I talk about men is one thing that's important is that we're not always so serious. We got to enjoy life sometimes. Yeah. We have to. I will talk to you about 80s music until you have to kick me out your house and I'll leave willingly. So I enjoy stuff like that. So I have fun on this. I have fun doing the podcast. I have fun talking to men such as yourself. So if you want to get into me, check the website. And then from then on in, get to the social media. I'm going to start working more on the blog. Love is Black is coming soon, and then that book is coming. I'm going to be doing a lot more public speaking. I got a lot coming in the next few months. I got a lot more to do, a lot more to say, a lot more men to help. So if it's all right with you, I'd like to end with something, if I could just speak to the men.
Of course.
I end my podcast with talking to the men. And the reason I do that is because, and we mentioned it earlier, that suicide is running rampant in men in general, but specifically in Black men too.
Mm.
And a lot of us go through times where we're struggling and we don't know where we're supposed to be or what we're supposed to be doing or how we're valued or whether we're even supposed to be on this planet. I end the podcast the same way. You are the good news that somebody needs every day. Your voice is something that somebody's been waiting. Your presence uplifts somebody. The fact that you call or talk or write or anything makes somebody else's day better. You are important to somebody. So if you're ever wondering why I should be here and if I don't need to be here anymore, just know we need you. I don't know you, but I love you. I need you. And there's somebody who does know you, who's waiting for you to walk into a room, to give them a hug, to smile at them, to give them affirmation, to make them feel good. You are important to so many people. But most important, make sure that you recognize your own value, because you're important to yourself. Because you are wonderful. You are a man. And you're the prize.
Harvey Laguerre, ladies and gentlemen, I don't have nothing else to say about that one. I'm going to just leave it right there. This is another episode of Conversations of the Heart with T-Till. Thank you for watching. Tune in next week. Peace.